headlines this hour. Following a fiasco at a G8 foreign ministers meeting, the U.S. president says he has not reached global agreement on more Iran sanctions. The pro-Israeli lobby mobilizes U.S. lawmakers for a more softened stance on Tel Aviv. But President Obama tells the Israelis they have to take bold steps for peace. And Turkey's ruling party submits to parliament constitutional changes to curb the judiciary's power.
It is 2200 GMT and 2:30 a.m. here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is Press TV's World News.
Many thanks for joining us. Now, U.S. President Barack Obama admits that Washington has failed to reach a global agreement on new sanctions against Iran over its nuclear energy program.
We are going to move forcefully on a U.N. sanctions regime. Now, do we have unanimity in the international community? Not yet. And that's something that we have to work on. We think that we are in a much stronger position to get robust sanctions now than we were a year ago prior to us initiating our strategy. But it's still difficult, partly because, let's be honest, Iran is an oil producer.
Well, Obama made the comments at a joint press conference with his visiting French counterpart, Nicolas Sarkozy. He said Washington hopes to have new sanctions against Iran this spring. Meanwhile, Sarkozy said France, along with other U.S. allies, will do its best to have sanctions imposed on Iran. Well, meanwhile, Russia says the G8 is not the appropriate summit to discuss measures against Iran's nuclear energy program.
The forum recognized by everyone concerning Iran's nuclear program is first of all the Board of Governors at the International Atomic Energy Agency, Security Council at the UN, that has already adopted several resolutions to support the IAEA and the Group 5 plus 1. So it would not be ethical for us during the meeting to make a decision on Iran ahead of time.
Well, this is while at a meeting in Canada, G8 foreign ministers called on the international community to step up pressure on Iran. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says Washington is making, quote, slow but steady progress towards introducing a new round of sanctions against Tehran. Clinton predicted reaching consensus with allies on sanctions. Now, for more analysis on this, we're being joined by political scientist and author Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi. Many thanks indeed for joining us here on Press TV. Now, Obama's been in the White House for a year now with his slogan of hope and change. But do you see any real difference in the U.S. policy toward Iran?
Substantively speaking, unfortunately not. And you know, 1 year in office is not a terribly long time to, you know, pass the muster of foreign policy change. So I think that we should give President Obama some more time to prove his valor on the issues of foreign policy, particularly pertaining to Iran and the Middle East. You know, the G8 summit missed an opportunity to pass a special resolution on Israel and its illegal settlements, etc. And that really reflects the misplaced priorities, not only on the part of G8, but also of Washington, that has focused laser-like on Iran, and this has, like, you know, a scapegoat capability vis-a-vis the issue of Israel and its transgression of international law.
Right now, the U.S. has lobbied effortlessly for more sanctions on Iran. Why do you think it has failed to win the international community's total support for it?
Well, as we have seen in the reaction of the leaders of countries such as Turkey and Brazil and quite a few number other countries, particularly the member states of the non-aligned movement, which is 118 member states, many countries around the world are simply not convinced by the evidence that has been presented by Israel, the U.S., and a few Western countries with respect to the allegations of proliferation activities on Iran's part. So in the absence of viable evidence, the U.S. has a hard time selling its agenda of further sanctions against Iran, and we have seen Secretary Clinton being openly rebuffed by President of Brazil recently, who said that he doesn't see any evidence of proliferation on Iran's part. So I think that's the key issue. In the absence of a smoking gun, there's a division in the international community, and some countries that are part of the G8 are also, you know, they have their own differences. And I'm thinking of Japan in particular, that is pushing for, you know, disarmament at the upcoming NPT conference, whereas all the others, especially the U.S., are focusing on non-proliferation.
But with watered-down statements such as the one reached at the G8 foreign ministers' meeting, if they actually do make it to reach consensus on the issue, when do you think a new round of sanctions could become a reality? And what effects do you think that could have on the daily lives of the Iranian people?
Well, first of all, we have seen that Washington has moved away from idea of tough or crippling sanctions to quote-unquote soft sanctions, and it's not at this point quite clear what the exact contents of the soft sanctions are. But the reason why the U.S. has done that is because that's the only way they see for countries such as Russia as well as China to come on board with sanctions, and this may or may not happen in late spring. If the sanctions are soft and relatively benign, this will have minimal effect on Iran and on the ordinary citizens. I think that the momentum for soft sanctions is steadily building, but it will be relatively harmless and will have minimum effect on Iran.
Just quickly, if you can, Iran has been asked to come back to the negotiating table and, on the other hand, threatened with sanctions. Is this, in your opinion, going to help ease the standoff?
Well, this is a bifurcated approach by the Western countries led by the U.S. That's an old story. And unfortunately, a lot more emphasis has been put on coercive action and on sanctions rather than diplomacy and dialogue. And this is reflected in the G8 statement on Iran as well. So I think Iran should take up the challenge of dialogue and push vigorously for follow-up Geneva II talk and try to convince the rest of the world that it's Iran that is honest and sincere about good faith negotiations, and the other side is giving lip service to it.
Right. A political scientist and author, Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi, many thanks indeed for your insight here on Press TV.
On to the United States now, where the powerful pro-Israeli lobby, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, known as AIPAC, is mobilizing U.S. lawmakers to pressure the White House to soften its stance on Tel Aviv. A letter from AIPAC has been circulating on Capitol Hill, urging members of Congress to pressure President Barack Obama into ending its public criticism of Israeli policies. The letter urges the U.S. to, quote, reinforce the members of the U.S. House of Representatives have already signed on to the open letter. The public disagreement between the U.S. and Israel was sparked by Tel Aviv's announcement of 1,600 new settlement units in eastern Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Under international law, all Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian lands are illegal.
Well, U.S. President Barack Obama says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu understands that he must take bold steps to revive the Middle East peace process. Obama said Netanyahu knows that the move is politically right, but thinks that it's not in Israel's side. Obama described recent tension between his administration and Israel as a disagreement between friends. He said the relationship between the U.S. and Israel is as solid as a rock.
Well, people in the besieged Gaza marked the land day on Tuesday, during which a teenager was shot dead and several others were injured by Israeli occupation forces. Yusuf Al-Hilu reports from Gaza.
A Palestinian teenager was shot dead and 12 people, including some children, were injured as Israeli troops opened fire at land day demonstrators near the Gaza border on Tuesday. Hundreds of people carrying Palestinian flags marched to the border east of the town of Khan Yunis to commemorate Israel's killing of 6 people during a 1976 protest by Israeli Arabs against land confiscations. The protesters threw stones at the Israeli troops along the border, who fired live rounds at them.
We came here to mark Land Day. Today we pay respect to those who were martyred while defending Palestinian lands. Land Day reminds us of our stolen lands by the Israeli occupation forces who are still keeping and confiscating Palestinian lands.
We have come here to say that despite the fences and walls and ongoing aggression, we will defend our lands. We will continue our struggle till we get our rights back.
The protesters were joined by internationally pro-Palestinian activists who take part in weekly events across Gaza. The violence occurred near the site of clashes that left two Palestinians and two Israeli soldiers dead over the weekend.
This is a demonstration to show that people do not forget all of the land that has been taken away. They lived there. That was their roots. This is generations. This is about 40 generations of people or more. And they have their title deeds to this land. They have their photos. They have their memories. And they are never going to forget.
Meanwhile, other events were held across the Strip. Farmers planted olive trees in areas destroyed during the 22-day war to show their steadfastness in the face of Israeli aggressions.
Today is the day of remaining steadfast. Israel is planning to confiscate all Palestinian lands in the occupied West Bank, Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip by forcing people to abandon their land. But the plans would never turn into reality.
Israel's Arab minority leads Land Day demonstrations every year to protest against housing demolitions and land confiscations. Similar events are held in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
Palestinians say Land Day has become a symbol of expressing their patriotism to their land, which is deeply rooted in their hearts. They also say they will defend it vigorously. Yusuf Al-Hilo, Press TV, Gaza.
Well, despite widespread criticism by the opposition, Turkey's ruling AK Party has submitted a draft of constitutional changes to parliament.
The government says the proposal includes measures that would increase standards of democracy and the law, as well as protect individual rights. The draft also aims to control the power of judges and prosecutors. The opposition, however, claims that the proposals are aimed to tighten the ruling party's grip on power. Turkey's senior judges accuse the government of seeking to disempower the judiciary through the amendments. The series of amendments to the constitution also paved the way for a trial of top military commanders by a civilian court and make disbanding political parties more difficult. Under the draft package, civilian courts will try military personnel in peacetime for coup attempts and offenses related to national security and organized crime. The government also defends the legal changes as an important step in the European Union accession process. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he will seek a referendum on constitutional changes if Parliament fails to pass the amendments. A parliamentary vote could come as early as next week, but there is a strong possibility of a referendum on the amendments this summer since the AK Party doesn't have enough votes in Parliament to pass the package without support from opposition parties.
You're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. Following a fiasco at a G8 foreign ministers meeting, the U.S. president says he has not reached global agreement on more Iran sanctions. Also, the pro-Israeli lobby mobilizes U.S. lawmakers for a more softened stance on Tel Aviv, but President Obama tells the Israelis they have to take bold steps for peace. Turkey's ruling party submits to parliament constitutional changes to curb the judiciary's power.